Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Gary Parrish. Welcome back. CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, leaky black. The Eye on College Basketball Podcast is presented by Jersey Mike's. Jersey Mike's, sub above. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent. And don't forget, while you're here, if you haven't already, go ahead and subscribe to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel. Let's get into it. As you know, Purdue woke up Tuesday morning with the sports best body of work, would you believe, as underdogs? The Boilermakers spent Tuesday night improving that body of work. Final score, Purdue 77, Illinois 71. It was inside the State Farm Center in Champaign. Zach Edey got 28 points, 8 rebounds. That's not bad for a guy who some people merely call tall instead of awesome. Either way, the Boilermakers are now the outright Big Ten champs for the second straight year. First team to do that in 17 years. They're now 27-3 overall. Best record in sport. 11-3 in quadrant one. Tops in the sport. 17-3 in the first two quadrants. Best in the nation. Number one in strength of record. And they're now also in possession of 9 wins over teams ranked in the top 25 of the net. If you're wondering, UConn has 5. Houston has 4. So Purdue has as many wins over teams ranked in the top 25 of the net as UConn and Houston combined, even though Houston and UConn are both currently ranked higher than Purdue in the AP poll. As you know, top 25 and 1. Purdue, number one, 15th consecutive morning. Dead leg. With all that, I'll turn it over to you. What'd you make of Purdue's win at Illinois that snapped the Illini's 3-game winning streak and enhanced Purdue's resume, I think, further into best in the sport?
I'll give a thought on the game here in a second, but real quick, send back to you. With this, and knowing we have UConn at Marquette on the road Wednesday night awaiting us, did Purdue lock up the number one overall seed with the win on the road? I would lean no, but another like just major high-end Q1 win to further bolster the resume. I don't know. We talked about an HQ last night. I wonder if you think if you put it at above 90%, Purdue the number one overall seed because of this win on the road.
No, I think it's like 100% that if we started the tournament right now, Purdue would be the number one overall seed. I do not think that they can't be caught. I mean, UConn could just blow through the Big East tournament, and by the time we get to Selection Sunday, it's crystal clear after Purdue, say, lost its first or second game in the Big Ten tournament, and Houston gets upset in the Big 12 tournament, it could be crystal clear that UConn is the number one overall seed. Houston could have a similar path for similar reasons. So I do think it's crystal clear right now it's Purdue, but I'm not convinced it's a lock, no.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I will say this, though. I think having the number one overall seed is obviously a pretty cool thing, a big point of pride for a program. And you get to choose your path to the Final Four. You got to win the games. But if you're the number one overall seed, you're the only school, the only team that actually gets to say, okay, we want to play our first weekend at this city and our second weekend in this city. That will really not be of material value this season because Purdue, Houston, and UConn are all one seed locks. There's no one, they can't be caught. They're all going to be on the one line. And because of that, UConn is going to play in Brooklyn and then it's going to go to Boston. No matter if it's the number one seed overall or not, it's going to be a one seed. It's going to do that. Purdue is going to play in Indianapolis and then it's going to play in Detroit. Doesn't matter if it's the one seed overall. That's the path that it's going to do. And then Houston is going to play in. Is Memphis? Yes, it would play in Memphis no matter what, and then it will play in Dallas. So the number one overall seed situation this year doesn't have as much on the line because those teams are going to go there anyway, but it is still a point to distinguish overall. But if you were unaware, well, now you are aware. As for the game, Illinois had been really good as of late, had dropped 95 against Iowa, went and put up 105 against the just okay Minnesota team and then goes on the road, obviously. And we saw what it did against Wisconsin over the weekend here on its home floor, held to 71 points. You know, a team that rates top five. It was three overall in KenPom offensive efficiency going into the game. It's four as that is refreshed overnight here on Wednesday morning. And Illinois had plenty of chances, gave Purdue a really good game. And Marcus Damask, again, had some good moments. I thought Coleman Hawkins played well. Terrence Shannon Jr. did not have one of his better games. But Illinois, like from an offensive standpoint, like Purdue controlled the pace a bit more and wanted to dictate not getting this thing out into to too crazy of a tempo there. Just 65 possessions, 77 points for Purdue. And the big buckets are the Lance Jones three, followed up, what, two possessions later maybe? By Braden Smith just kind of strutting down and saying, fine, I'll just fire this one from NBA range and give you the near dagger. And Braden Smith, you know, just continues to be a top 10 point guard, maybe top five point guard really at this point. He's right in that discussion there. He had 13 points, six assists, played well. Edie was great again. I mean, I don't take him for granted, but 28 points, eight rebounds, three assists, and Bob's your uncle. Like, what do you want from me? He continues to just be the most unstoppable force in the game. But I was on balance. It was the latest example where I'm like, okay, like Purdue keeps stacking these and I get it. I get it. And I don't push back on how much March is going to mean for Purdue. I get that. I get it. But I just keep seeing this team win so many games in impressive ways that the confidence is only inflating, 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 inflating. And the play combined of Smith and Fletcher Lawyer is undeniably more consistent. Doesn't mean Purdue can't get caught. But I would say this. I said this on HQ yesterday as well. We'll see what the bracket is and how it looks. I'm just telling you, there are going to be so many people that fade Purdue. If you're in a bracket pool, let's say Purdue's the number one overall seed. You will almost definitely never get this again. Virginia kind of applied, but I don't even think Virginia applied on the level that Purdue is going to apply this year. There is such a stigma attached to Purdue this season that you will never have a better chance or a better value for a one seed picking it to win the NCAA tournament than this year with Purdue. Because a lot of people will just say, I'm not going to pick Purdue. And I get that. That's fine. But I'm telling you, team can win the national championship. And if you want, like, you just rarely... From a bracket standpoint, this is an early tip for you out there. You just will not get this. If you have a number one overall seed in any given year, like Alabama last year, and pick any team from recent seasons, that team is going to probably be the most popular pick to win your bracket pool. That will not be the case with Purdue this year. So there is some. There's also some good inherent value there. Big time win for the Boilermakers as they continue to just, you know, separate themselves from the league and and it just has wound up not being close. Illinois is the number two team in the country, and it couldn't take them out. Had the game at home, couldn't get it done.
Number two team in the Big Ten.
Did I say country? Yeah.
Yeah.
Big Ten, not the country. Yes, sorry.
Remind me what you called Braden Smith, a top what point guard?
I definitely top 10. I think he's approaching top five status, having watched him all season long and see his development there. I think he is in that realm. Defensively, not there, but I think on the whole and what he provides from a value standpoint, I think he is unquestionably a top 10 point guard.
Okay, remind me, did you ever say that about him last year?
No, definitely not. Definitely never said that about him. No.
Okay, this is a different team. That's my point.
Yeah.
Every time you talk about Purdue, tweet about Purdue, write about Purdue, somebody is very eager to tell you, I've already seen this team. I know what they're going to do. Tell me about Fairleigh Dickinson. It's the same thing as always because they look at a team and they got the same uniforms or something close to them. You look at the coach, it's the same guy you remember. You look at the best player, it's the same guy you remember. You look at a lot of the other players, they're the same guys you remember. So people look at that and they go, well, it's Purdue. And they just dismiss it offhand. The problem is with that is that this is a wildly different team. And I mean better team. You know, they won the Big Ten outright last season with a 15-5 league record. They're going to be better than that this year. They're 16-3 in the league right now with a home game against Wisconsin coming up. Barring an upset, they're going to finish 17-3. Their adjusted efficiency margin at KenPom last season was plus 23.24. Now, yes, that was after they lost to Fairleigh Dickinson, but 23.24, that's where they were. They're at plus 29.94 right now. They shoot it better from the perimeter. Lance Jones, a transfer, as Matt Painter pointed out last night in his postgame press conference, he added athleticism, defense. This is not the same Purdue team that lost to Fairleigh Dickinson. And I want to be clear, if you took that same Purdue team and put them back in last season's tournament, I'd pick them to go far again. I don't think that would ever happen again if you played it 20 more times, 30 more times. I think that's something that happened one time. But either way, I'd never say never because it's a basketball game and it's a basketball tournament and we've seen wild things. I'd be shocked if Purdue doesn't show up in this NCAA tournament. But circling back to a point you made, I do think more than any other program and perhaps any other coach in America, they have to perform in the NCAA tournament or else it undoes all of this. Do you remember when we were kids, me, a little older than you, a lot older than you, but like the Buffalo Bills like went to, what was it? Was it four straight Super Bowls?
Four straight. That's right.
That is an amazing accomplishment.
Yeah.
That's amazing. What that really means, if you just frame it differently, is the Buffalo Bills won four straight AFC championships. That's amazing. Nobody cares. You lost four Super Bowls. That's all anybody remembers. And for Purdue, it'll be similar. If you cannot take this, and I really do think I agree with my colleague, John Rothstein, if you don't take this all the way to the Final Four, people will never care as much about back-to-back outright Big Ten championships and back-to-back National Player of the Year awards as much as they'll care about pointing out, yeah, of course, they were really good in the regular season, but when they got into the NCAA tournament, where you have to play different styles and different leagues and different everything, they couldn't do it. And it won't matter that they spent their non-league schedule last year beating other great teams from other great leagues, and they spent their non-league schedule this season beating other great teams from other great leagues. It'll just matter that in the NCAA tournament, they lost as a 1-16, and then whatever happened short of the Final Four this year happened, and that'll be the overriding narrative connected to Purdue unless they can avoid it. It's not fair, I don't guess, but it is their reality.
It is, and this is going to be, I think, the number one storyline when we get to the bracket in a week and a half. So just brace for that. Purdue has won seven straight games against AP-ranked teams. Hasn't done that since 1987-88. And by nature of winning the Big Ten in consecutive years outright, it's the first program to do it since Ohio State did it 06-07. So congrats to Purdue for getting that done in the driver's seat for the number one overall seed.
Shouts to Daquan Cook.
Yeah, shouts to Daquan Cook for sure, man. Yeah, no doubt about it. Shouts to Mike Conley, of course, too.
Shouts to Mike Conley.
Yep.
Grizzly great.
If you say so.
Grizzly great.
I can't speak to his greatness as a Grizzly. I have to rely entirely on you with that. I'll take your word.
That Captain Clutch.
All right. I mean,
you're talking about Captain Clutch. You don't even know.
Did he actually have
that? That might be the most only Memphis thing in the history of the world that Mike Conley was called Captain Clutch.
Yeah, that is a Memphis only thing.
It's not even good. Hey, Purdue winning at Illinois was not the only interesting result from the past couple of nights. We're gonna bounce around some other ones next. First, though, give me a word from our partners.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Is Anderson Cooper now one of our partners?
He might be. If you're listening to the audio version, you don't know, but Anderson Cooper just appeared on the YouTube version for our partner. So maybe.
I hope he is. I would like to be partners with Anderson Cooper. I like okay. Anderson Cooper.
All right. Well, there we have it. Shall we do a
tour? I don't know that I can actually be partners with Anderson Cooper. I think he's taken, and technically
he
might be.
Hey, listen, you said it, so I was going to let it go.
I think he's taken, and I'm taken. So there's probably no real future between me and Anderson Cooper.
Can we talk about Florida versus Alabama?
But I do hope, like in another world, I wouldn't mind being partners with Anderson Cooper. I find him interesting and intelligent.
I agree. On Tuesday night,
okay,
down at the O-Dome, mm-hmm. Alabama lost again and stayed a top 10 Ken Pom team. It's wild.
They got their brains beat in. Why did they do that? They shouldn't have done that. That wasn't smart.
Alabama's 20-10 at a 20-10, developing into one of the most intriguing resumes in the sport, in my opinion. Still the number one offense in the country, 105-87. 105-87. It's the second time in as many road games that Alabama has allowed the home team to go for 100+. You'll recall Kentucky went for 117 on CBS a week and a half ago. Credit to Florida. It's a lock, obviously, with this. It was going anyway, but this is like, you're a lock. You're getting in. Bama's probably in that 4-seed range. I would say they're probably squarely a 4-seed. Florida probably in the 8-9 game right now. 18-point margin for Florida. They showed up big. They had four guys with at least 19 points in this one. And Walter Clayton Jr., he was aggressive as I think they need him to be throughout the remainder of the season. I mean, he got to the line, 15-plus times in this game. And Florida's defense showed up big. Alabama did not move the ball as well as it normally has. And it was more about Florida winning the game and kind of just asserting its dominance. Will Richard showed up with 23 points, and I was impressed on the whole. There was a foul free throw disparity. I get it. If you're a Bama fan, you know, Florida took what, like 20 more foul shots than Bama.
They got 40 points from the free throw line.
It's crazy. I mean, that's definitely part of it. Whatever. I'm not here to debate every single whistle, every single foul call. If you watch the game, Florida clearly was the better team. Florida deserved to win. It wasn't close. Alabama's now 20-10. And I posted it on Tuesday night. I was like, how many games do you trust Alabama to win in the NCAA tournament? The most common answer was one. I don't think I saw a single person say three, nor should they. I'm declaring right here, right now, at a certain point, like, I get that you have a good offense. I took Florida out of the Final Four conversation after the Kentucky game, and maybe even before that. I will not pick this team to make the Elite Eight. Too many losses to this point. I've seen this team look good, and I've seen it look like ass. And it looked like ass on Tuesday night. I'm not going to say T-ball score, not that high, not on the register yet, but I will not pick Alabama to win more than two games in the tournament. I just can't, man. There's how much more evidence do you need to see? They've played Ohio State and lost, Clemson and lost, Purdue and lost, Creighton and lost, Arizona and lost, Tennessee and lost, Auburn and lost, Kentucky and lost, Tennessee and lost, Florida and lost. All those teams are either top end NCAA tournament seeds, or, you know, in the case of like Ohio State early, you know, it was still, you know, a halfway decent team at that point. So just keep another bracket tip for you. Keep that in mind. If you're thinking like, Alabama, they can score a lot. I'm on the four line. Hey, have fun. I would not pick them to make the Final Four. I cannot see this team happening. And I put the Elite Eight out of mind as well.
What's their best win away from Coleman Coliseum?
I'm looking right now. Their best win is at Mississippi State is their best win away from Coleman, I think.
Here's the deal with, they hadn't done much. They got incredible computer numbers, but in terms of like, what have you done? Like you just ask somebody, hey, what have you done? We've been doing this for about four. We've been doing this for like 4 months now. What have you done?
Are they tricking the machine? Are we a computer tricker?
I mean, it certainly has all, it has all the characteristics of it.
Okay.
All right. But it's easy to understand. It's all tied to that offense. It is the number one rated offense in America. The problem becomes when you guard so infrequently and poorly, it almost doesn't matter how good your offense is. You're not going to be able to survive a single elimination tournament as long as you would like to survive it. If you told me the NCAA tournament was like a series of best of three or best of five or best of seven, and wouldn't that be something? Boy, that'd probably take a minute to complete.
Yeah, I like things the way they are, but yes.
Well, you better enjoy them while you have, because they ain't going to be the way they are for long.
We'll see.
The problem with if best of three, best of five, best of seven, it's like, okay, well, if they can just bomb you every other game, then that'll be good enough. But in a single elimination tournament, eventually, even though this is a high volume 3-point shooting team and a good one, they shoot 37% from three. Eventually that 30, you will shoot, like, let's just a series of four games. That's what it takes to get to the Final Four. In a four game series, Alabama is capable of shooting like 42% from three with taking half their shots from the 3-point line. And that's when they could beat literally anybody. They would beat anybody doing that because of how many they're going to take. If they make them at a good percentage, they would beat, I don't want to say anybody, but they'd be a scary situation for anybody. The problem becomes, either game one or game two or game three, or at some point that's going to be 21% on half their shots coming from three, and they don't guard well enough to stay in the game when they're shooting the ball like that. I'm with you. If I'm a one seed and they get on that eight line, it's the last team I want to see, because I know they do something that could bury me, right? But they're not going to be able to do that something consistently enough to get to Arizona, I don't think. Obviously, now they'll do it, and we'll clip this, and we'll laugh about it. But the defense is so bad. And by the way, this ain't just you and I talking. Nate Oates said the same thing 2 weeks ago after they got bombed by Kentucky. He said, we don't guard anybody. And, like, tonight was – now the world knows. And it ain't got better since then.
Keep it moving here. Duke and North Carolina are going to face off on Saturday to close the regular season. They both played earlier this week. Duke had no issues against NC State, 79-64. Duke has built out itself, I think, a nice resume on the whole. I will never say Duke is flying under the radar because I don't believe that's the case. But you get a little bit of like, hey, how about Duke there? Looking, sitting tight there at 7th and KenPom. UNC is 8th in KenPom. They're both 24-6. Carolina on Tuesday night had no issues at home. Senior night, 84-51 win over Notre Dame. It is believed to be the final time that Armando Bacot and RJ Davis will play for North Carolina. RJ Davis went for 22 points. Bacot had 14. His final bucket was a three-pointer. How about Bacot, man? Finishes his final home game, goes 2-for-2 from beyond the arc. That's kind of cool there overall. He had some cool stuff to say afterward. UNC is guaranteed a share of the ACC regular season championship. Good job out of Hubert Davis in Carolina this season. You know, that's a nice turnaround. And I would venture he's going to win ACC Coach of the Year after the disaster of a season ago. Any thoughts on the results or just the fact that we've got a good Duke-UNC matchup awaiting? We also have a poll right now. Which team you think will win more games from now through the end of the season entirely, tournament included? UNC is winning that poll 55% to 45%. Tar Heels will win more games, which is interesting because Duke has the edge in the short term. It gets to host the next game.
Yeah, I love that Duke Carolina is for something connected to the ACC. Obviously, Carolina already guaranteed a share, but because Duke was able to win at NC State on Monday night, they can make it only a share and get a share themselves, or if Carolina wins, they're outright champs. So, I think there's perhaps bigger stakes on some level. Both these teams are still in contention. Do you agree with this? What? They could both be the fourth number one seed.
Duke has to win out. Yes, it could be. I think Duke cannot lose again. It has to win here and then win the ACC tournament, and then Arizona can't win out. Tennessee right. can't win out. But Duke's it's a longer shot. But yeah, I wouldn't say
it's possible. Yeah, I wouldn't say it's impossible. I wouldn't say it's probable, but I do think winning out it makes it possible. Yeah. And winning out starts with winning this weekend against Carolina. And, you know, I don't know if Duke has sort of settled into like a 7 or 8 man rotation, really cut it down. Caleb Foster obviously hurt, but they've cut it down. They're not playing many guys now. And I unless you are pressing full court and really getting up and down the court, I never see a need to use more than 7 or 8 guys in a college basketball game, particularly by the time you get to the NCAA tournament with long timeouts and all that stuff. So I know it's forced on him a little bit because of injuries, but anytime I see a team playing like 7, 8 guys, I'm like, okay, they're locked into what they're doing.
Come on, Duke.
Shire's doing a good job. And we'll obviously talk about that game and preview it on Friday, but notable there. Also in the ACC, all right, let's just do two bubble teams. We'll go with Wake first. My God, man.
Very disappointed in them.
Wake Forest dropped its 3rd straight game. It dropped its 5th game in its last 7. It loses 70-69 to Georgia Tech. It does this after playing with its food to start this game, man. Georgia Tech went on a 14-0 run. It was what? It was like 24-9, 24-6 early on. Wake Forest at home, at the Joel, where it had not been vulnerable to any kind of defeat. 70-69. They come back. They come all the way back. They finally take their first lead in the final minute of the damn game, and they can't get it done, man. Just a crazy shot by Ndongo, by the way. The shot that went in, that fell down. Damon Stoudemire. Georgia Tech is 14-16, but it has a win against Duke. It has a win against Clemson on the road. It has a win against UNC, has defeated Wake Forest. Again, like we mentioned this, you know, I think it was after the Duke win, maybe. There's just like good signs moving forward. Yeah. You know, it's a sub 500 team. It's not a great debut season. He's not Danny Sprinkle over here, but it's good indications there. Wake Forest, though, you're the story. What is going on, man? Like 18-12, it just refuses to put together an at-large worthy resume. There's another would-be bubble team I want to get to in a second, but any thoughts on, other than the obvious ones, I guess, about the Demon Deacons? Just, dude, it was right there for them. Disappointed is the right word, Parrish, man. At Notre Dame, at Virginia Tech, home against Georgia Tech. Just go 2-1. They went 0-3. They're not first four out. Like, they're beyond that now at this point. They host Clemson this weekend. They have to win that. And they almost certainly need to win 2 games in the ACC tournament to get back on the better side of the bubble.
Yeah, it's rough. And they've done this to themselves. I mean, it was set up for them. They beat Duke. They stormed the court. And then it's like, all right, you're playing a bad team next. And then, you know, the Virginia Tech thing, like, whatever. It's a road game against a not awful team. Like, lose that one. I don't care. But you can't lose all of these, and now they've lost 3 straight. They've got Clemson at home this weekend. That's an opportunity to, you know, turn it back the other direction. It's also an opportunity for you to take a 4-game losing streak into the ACC tournament. It's just you can't. We were in studio, and like, you know, Anthony Billis is in studio with us. He's a Wake Forest alum, so he's obviously locked in on it. It was a fun night because we had Anthony locked in on Wake and Brent Stover locked in on Kansas State. You know, they're fighting for their lives, both these clubs. And obviously Kansas State got run pretty good by Kansas. But you see Wake go down so early. Like, yo, man, they're down. It's 2-0, 6-0, 9, whatever it was. You know, it's like, what are you doing? You're at home. And it's like, where are they playing this? What, at home? They're down 12-0 at home to Georgia Tech. So you just got to fight the whole game to get back in it. And then Hunter Salas was like, he made one big play after another late, and it looked like he won it. You just need one stop.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I don't mind the way they guarded the final possession. You know, just, it was just a young man hitting a nice, like hitting a big time shot. But if you're Wake and you're this close to getting where you want to get to, you just can't put yourself in a situation where you have to battle back the whole game and then where you're at risk of losing at the buzzer the way they did. It was just, it's a rough night and what's been a rough stretch. And now they're going to have to go to the ACC tournament. And I don't know if they got to win it, but no, they got to go far. They got to go really far.
They'll have to win it if they lose at home to Clemson. What's wild is like Wake Forest is talented enough to win the ACC tournament, so maybe that happens and they get in that way. I actually think it's not unthinkable that would happen. There's a little comments in the chat about Pitt. Pitt did win at home against FSU. It's 20-10. It's got more work to do, but you know, on the outskirts there, another team that's on the outskirts. This team was on our network last night. UNLV is a wagon. UNLV is 10-1 in its last 11 games. Its only loss is by 3 points at home to Nevada. It's not in the bubble picture yet, but I'm going to ask you if it should be. This team has a win against Creighton in the non-con. It has defeated New Mexico twice. It has a win over Boise State. It has a win against San Diego State. It has a win against Colorado State. If you want the quad numbers, here's your breakdown on UNLV right now. It's 3-4 in quad one, 5-1 in quad two. I'm looking at the wrong team. It is 5-3 in quad one, 1-4 in quad two. It's reversed. So it's 6-7 in the first two quadrants. That's a better mark in the top two quads than a lot of teams that are in the tournament right now. The problem is it is 7-3 in quad four. So the quad four losses are rightfully dragging it down. Its metrics don't suggest it should be in the at-large conversation just yet, because its best one from a team sheet perspective is KPI, where it's 59. It's 83 in strength of record. Again, those quad three losses or quad four losses will anchor you to the bottom of the ocean. 77 in the net, 64 BPI, 75 KenPom. Not there, but UNLV is fascinating, Parrish, because it has a better collection of wins than many of the teams on either side of the cut line. But that's why every game matters. And it's why I believe there's a little more talk about, like, maybe we should go back to, like, okay, you're building your team towards something. And so what you will show yourself to be in the back half of your schedule, you know, February into March, that's who you are. Maybe we should have a little bit of weight to it. I push back on that because it would diminish November and December even more. I think that is an imperative for college basketball to keep those games to have actual meaning that is identical as best it can be through a committee that votes on this stuff, GP. Because otherwise, what would be the motivation to play those games, you know? So I don't think that we should discard that. But UNLV is a fascinating case. That being said, it's fascinating in that this team now is operating like one of the 30 best teams in the country, but it does not have one of the 50 or 60 best resumes. It plays at Nevada on Saturday. I think we will have to, if it wins at Nevada, I think we are going to, I think we have to have a fair discussion about if it should be in the field, because I promise you, if they win at Nevada and we took that resume and we compared it against a team in a power conference, even with the three Q4s, GP, I think we would be debating that team more heavily than we are UNLV. Your thoughts on the game and just the fascinating resume that is the Runnin' Rebels?
They're great right now. It may be great's too strong of a word, but they are like Mountain West Conference tournament. It's going to be played in Thomas. Did you hear it's going to be played at Thomas and Mack?
In fact, keep talking, GP. Nada, throw this Torvik tweet up on the screen as well, because it's got the percentages of winning this thing. It's incredible. But yeah, keep it going. It is at Thomas and Mack, I am aware.
Like, would you pick them maybe to win the Mountain West Conference tournament right now? They're 10-1 in their last 11. They have home court advantage. They just beat San Diego State at home, and not like, you know, they got lucky doing. They just beat them. They just beat them the whole game. Basically, they guarded them from the jump. Like, there's a real purpose with what that team's doing right now. Like, you watch them, and they don't look like a team with three quadrant four losses, but they are a team with three quadrant four losses. I saw Doug Gottlieb tweet late last night that Nevada, UNLV this weekend is a play-in game. Well, I don't think that's quite right, because Nevada's in no matter what, so they ain't playing to get in anything. Right. Nevada could lose.
Mexico is on the cut line right now.
And then UNLV, I don't think even with a win is in. Like, they're 79th in the net, or 77th in the net. Teams in the 70s from outside the Power Four, or even Power Five, or even Power Six, they don't get into the NCAA tournament in the 70s in the net. So it's awesome that they're playing really well lately, and they do have five quadrant one wins. That's the same number that Duke has. It's the same number that Kentucky has. But those three quadrant four losses, like you said, they just tie you to the bottom of the ocean. And I understand the philosophy with, but what are we watching? This is clearly one of the best what would it have to be? 36 at-large teams in the country if you just base it on what we're watching right now and what's happening right now. But I would just counter that by asking you, what other sport, mainstream sport in America, do we say what happened early doesn't matter? It's not really something we do.
No, the whole schedule matters. So just like, in, you know, basketball is different because of how many teams I get all that. But no, like it's your record is your record and you get in based on the wins and there you go. So yeah, we should not change that. I've heard that a little bit more, but that shouldn't be the case. For everyone listening, not watching, we've got the simulator for the Mountain West tournament via Torvik's magic machine here. I bet you didn't even know you could do this on Torvik, did you? Another way of setting data right here, GP.
I heard about it.
Okay, here, look at that far right column. Look at the percentages that there's a chance the champion to come out of the tournament right now. Utah State, Nevada, 13.7%. New Mexico, 13.2%. UNLV, 14.9%, which is ahead of Boise State at 12.9%. Colorado State, it's ahead of them at 10.6%. And then San Diego State right now, 20.7%. That championship percentage on the far right column is insanity. That you will not have, like, you will not have a single other conference that has that even of a disparity across 4+ teams. That just shows you how balanced this is. And I think UNLV's number might be juiced a couple of percentage points by nature of the fact that it's playing in its home building. But that is incredible, man. You want to talk about the most entertaining conference in America, which I've been saying is the Mountain West for weeks and weeks and weeks. This only reinforces that. So right here, per Torvik, UNLV is the second most likely Mountain West tournament champion as of right now. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, like I don't think there's another league in the country, and there's rarely ever a league in the country where you can say that seven teams can reasonably hope to win it. The six that are projected to make the NCAA tournament right now out of the Mountain West, and then the home team, UNLV, which is arguably, if not undeniably, playing better than anybody else right now. So if you told me UNLV wins this, I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. But if you told me UNLV was able to build an at-large resume by while not winning this, that kind of would. Because you can argue and debate the principles that the selection committee is instructed to use. But once, and you might make some good points, but once you acknowledge this is the way they do it, and we all know the way they do it, UNLV is going to have a hard time getting in that conversation, given the damage that it did in quadrant four. And frankly, this is the exact same conversation we could have about South Florida. It's the same thing.
I almost injected South Florida, but I know we're tighter on time today.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Like I would, you know, if you want me to say
South Florida it doesn't even have the same amount of wins though. Like, right. UNLV has a better case than South Florida right now, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's just like, if you want me to say, GP, would you like to see South Florida and UNLV in the NCAA tournament instead of some mediocre, you know, Big Ten team or SEC team or Big 12 team or whatever? Sure, yeah, I would like that. Both those teams have had incredible seasons, especially lately. But that's not the way we do it. And the way that the process is going to unfold is not going to be kind to UNLV and South Florida, even if those two teams are doing really, really impressive stuff right now.
A couple more results just to whip around, and then one news item before we take our next break and wrap up here. Kansas did win. A quick thumbs up, thumbs down on the Kansas Senior Night home Reds, by the way. They destroyed Kansas State. Wasn't that great of a game there. But that's become a thing. To me, it looks a bit weird, but maybe you like it. Are you in favor? Yes or no?
I do like it. I like alternative uniforms, and I like the Kansas red. Yeah. I like the Kansas red a little bit like I like the Ole Miss baby blues. Powder blues.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I like those colors sometimes. I like different
blue
colors.
Is like the most universally accepted uniform color. It's basically impossible to screw up a uniform if you're wearing powder blue. Almost impossible. I'm okay with it, but I just felt weird watching KU in those colors. I think I think some Kansas fans are in favor, some are not. Kansas gets back on the right side of things after stumbling as of late. Baylor on Monday night roared. Texas got out to a big lead early, and Baylor just flipped it. We'll at least note that Baylor right now, 2 seed, because it didn't blow the opportunity. It came back big time and won. And then non-Big 12, I apologize for bringing attention to it, to the fans of this program, but I just, it's barely been brought up because the team has been so terrible, but it is wowing that Missouri is this bad. I mean, it is 8-22. It's 0-17 in the league. It's final. It lost on Tuesday at home, 101-74 to Auburn. This is a team that Dennis Gates in his first season got to the tournament last year as a 7 seed. They won a game. You know, they lost to Princeton, and it's been a spiral since. It's just bizarre. Hope that that can get turned around. Missouri fans might live a more a quieter, miserable existence than maybe any other fan base that doesn't get attention for that existence there. I see you. I feel for you, Mizzou fans. That was a tough one. But I would argue Mizzou was not the biggest loser on Tuesday night.
Let me stop you here for a second.
Okay.
The last coach to go 0-18 in the SEC got fired. That was Bryce Drew.
I was wondering.
And with the benefit of hindsight, maybe shouldn't have. Maybe should have just flushed that and moved on.
That was controversial when it happened, too, but yeah.
Yeah, maybe you should have just said, hey, Darius Garland got hurt. So, like, you know, what are you going to do? And you'd be better off today because Grand Canyon, I believe, is like 26-4, top 60 in computers. Grand Canyon basketball is in a better place than Vanderbilt basketball. And Grand Canyon basketball is being run by the guy that Vanderbilt said, we don't want you to run our basketball program anymore.
By the way, I asked Bryce about what he thinks about Vanderbilt season.
This is Bryce, and I don't care.
Okay. That's mature of him to take that approach. Yeah. You know, doesn't do anybody any good to hold on to that resentment, right? Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I'm not saying Dennis Gates is Bryce Drew. I'm not saying anything other than if you believe in Dennis Gates – and don't you think everybody on that campus did, like, on the day the season started?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you believe that, I would chalk this up to just a horrific season and see where we go from here. I will say, I was talking to Seren Petro yesterday, does radio in Kansas City, and he hit me with a trivia time. I want to hit you with the trivia time.
Hit me. Oh, before you hit me with it, did you get it?
No.
Okay. Then okay.
How many men in the sport of men's college basketball or women, if you want to, like, you know, branch it out, have ever in a career done both of these things, gone winless in conference play and made a Final Four? How many coaches?
And you said you didn't get it. I feel like you're going to say the answer is zero. So
now, you ready? Oh. You ready? That was exactly what my answer was, and that is incorrect.
Okay, so it's not zero. So a coach to go winless in league play and make a Final Four or win a title?
Make a Final Four. You got to do both those things in the same lifetime. If you did them in different lifetimes, that would be amazing, actually.
That'd be incredible, and we might need to...
What if somebody could do that in different lifetimes? That would be incredible.
What? If there's going to be someone that does it, it's going to be Tony Hinkle. So keep an eye out.
Yeah, you keep an eye out.
This is a great factoid. So, Hall of Famer or no? You have the answer? Like, do you know who did it?
Yeah, I do know who did it. Neither are in the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Both could reasonably be in the Hall of Fame.
Ooh. All right, give it to me. I'm fascinated to... like, I almost want to say, like, did Tex Winter do it? I don't know. Like, but who is it?
One of them is Steve Fisher.
Oh, that's a good one. Okay.
Went to Final Fours.
Yes.
At Michigan. Also had a 0-14 league record at San Diego State in 1999-2000.
Good call. Okay.
The other one, Kelvin Sampson.
Oh, no way.
Has been to multiple Final Fours, Oklahoma and Houston. Also had a 0-15 record in league.
Washington State?
Montana Tech.
Montana Tech, okay.
1981-82.
Good stuff.
That is good. Shout out to Seren Petro.
That is a great,
shout
great
to Kansas
nugget.
City. Shouts to Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift.
There we go. Biggest loser, though, Eastern Kentucky. Now, not the best little major out there, don't get me wrong. But it was the 1 seed in the A-Sun. Conference tournament play has begun. Oh, my gosh. And the thing is, in the A-Sun, man, you get the game at home if you're the higher seed. Madness has arrived. Sorry, EKU. I picked the Colonels and the Jerome to win this thing, and I'm already done. Lose Tuesday night, 67-65 to 10th-seeded Jacksonville, the Dolphins. The Dolphins continue... and they will play Stetson on the road on Thursday in the A-Sun semifinal. So madness has arrived. That's a tough one for EKU because, as we talked in the offseason, the NIT no longer is taking every single regular season champion. That had been the process for the past couple of decades. NCAA changed that protocol, and since Eastern Kentucky was, you know, a 17-14 team now, I don't think it's going to get an NIT invite. That is a bummer, but that is the case now. And so you go from being the one seed, thinking like, okay, you know, might be able to go to the tournament, to now, because not every champ that doesn't qualify for the NCAAs gets into the NIT, they even lose that opportunity, which is obviously a very coveted one for schools at that level. So that's a bummer. That's the biggest loser of Tuesday.
Are we ready to look ahead to the next two nights?
I'll just give a quick note. This is not game related, but it is our sport, and this is the kind of thing that like made the national news. Dartmouth players did officially vote to organize as a union this week, actually did that, and then went out and beat Harvard, and Dartmouth does have a good team. So that transcends the sport. It is a years-long process. Like, this is a significant news event for college athletics. The idea that players could eventually unionize, and it's specialized here, I'm not getting into the minutia because we got a tight show, but you know, it's a private institution. The Regional National Labor Relations Board voted, approved it, and now they have voted to unionize. This process is expected to take years, and whether this will eventually have downstream effects 3, 5, 7 years down the road, where employees across college athletics or athletes or employees across college athletics, that would be the most significant sea change. It's a ways off, but if it were to happen, and you get disagreements of people in the legal realm of whether it will, some many think that it should, this is really the first domino. You know, you see that meme with the tiny guy toppling over a domino, and then there's like the huge one that's like 30 away. That would be that. So at least notable that that did happen as expected this week. Dartmouth is already going to petition as a university this unionization decision, and we will see. This eventually might go to the Supreme Court. Who knows? If it does, it's not going to be good for the NCAA and these schools, but that was a notable headline earlier this week as well.
We'll look ahead to the next two nights next, but first, let's get one more word from our partners.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I was hoping for Anderson Cooper. On CBS Sports Network tonight, we got a doubleheader. And you know what the best thing about a doubleheader is, don't you?
It's not a tripleheader?
It's not a tripleheader.
Okay.
I'm so excited about tonight. This is going to be the best night of the season. I don't even care what happens. This is a good night. 7:30 Eastern, Xavier at Butler. 9:30 Eastern, Utah State, the Aggies, ranked 23rd in the 22nd in the latest AP poll. They're going to be at San Jose State. Then we'll wrap the night with Inside College Basketball. Elsewhere on Wednesday, Villanova at Seton Hall. Ooh, Big East,
you know,
bubble
that
game.
Is, that's a double bubble.
Oh, double bubble. Number one, Houston's at UCF. Hey, don't laugh. Kansas lost there. Texas lost there. Texas Tech lost there. Number four, Tennessee's at number 17, South Carolina. That's a nice one.
It's a good night, GP. This is a loaded night, man. Are you kidding me? You haven't even gotten to the biggest game, have you?
Northwestern at Michigan State. Northwestern at Michigan State. Boo booey. Number two, UConn at number eight, Marquette. No Tyler Kolek.
I know. No Tyler Kolek.
I will say that last Friday I had to go on HQ to talk like to preview was it Marquette Creighton? And I was like Tyler Kolek is out or expected to be out with an oblique injury. And I was like, you know, I've said that a million times, oblique injury. I don't even think I know what it is. What does that even feel like? I've never had an oblique.
You know where it is on the body though, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a muscle thing. Yeah, like right here. It's like right here, right? It's like
there we go. Yeah.
Look at me. Am I doing an impersonation of a like Donkey Kong now?
I don't know what you're doing.
Maybe I look like Donkey Kong.
That is, good God, you are not a doctor. He has claimed to be on this podcast. What is this?
Yeah. I don't know what I'm doing. Okay. So I Googled, what does it feel like to have an oblique injury? Because I just wanted to know. And you know what it said? I swear to God, this is what came up. It feels like you're being stabbed by a knife. Second definition, stabbing. Stabbing. I was like, well, I guess he ain't playing. If he feels like he got stabbed by a knife, I guess he's not playing.
That's a tough situation right there.
I know, right? How are you supposed to go out and play basketball in Omaha?
He didn't, and he will not play in this one either. So
so then they announced he's out for the rest of the regular season. I was like, I guess so. He got stabbed. Christ, who wouldn't be?
It's a tough one for Kolek. Hope to get him on the floor. Come on, give me Marquette at full strength for the Big East tournament. There, it's a hell. At least you know what. I'm happy that you can say oblique because you still can't say groin. So the fact that you can even pronounce oblique makes me proud.
Oh, I got a big problem coming up on the Gary Parrish show.
Is there a Memphis player that has a groin injury?
Derrick Rose, and I don't know what to do about it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Let me just cycle through this Wednesday night schedule once more for our listeners and viewers.
BYU at Iowa State. Okay. I don't want to leave that one out.
That's a big one. So UConn at Marquette's the biggie. 8:30 Eastern, FS1. That's a major game, just a watchable game. I want to see if Marquette can, you know, comport itself like a top 15 team after it got blown out by UConn on the road at Hartford, obviously a few weeks back there. BYU Iowa State's a fantastic matchup. In terms of seeding, it means something. Trust me, like BYU, that's a potential sea line bump. Don't get me wrong. That's just a good game against two teams with vastly different styles. So I'm super excited about that. Tennessee at South Carolina. Tennessee wanting to stay on the one line, you know, winning on the road at South Carolina really reinforces that. So you got some like really good teams in tough road environments here on Wednesday night. It is an awesome, awesome, awesome night. Mississippi State, you know, it's in the field, but plays at A&M on the road. So, you know, could be in that cut line situation if it takes a loss there. Double bubble, Nova Seton Hall is super intriguing to me. Butler is at home. By no means can it lose at home to Xavier. It's not in the field right now, but has to minimally win that. FAU is at North Texas. That's a road game. FAU's in the field with room to spare, but if it were to lose, like, you know, is it flirting then with, you know, double-digit seed territory? I don't know. There's a lot there. I think Houston will win at UCFGP, but I almost wonder if they're able to maybe keep that one close. Like, is that the one result here on Wednesday night where we perk up and are like, how about that one? So, yeah, keep an eye on that one. But, yeah, no, Wednesday night is loaded. What do we have on Thursday?
Washington at number 18, Washington State.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Number five, Arizona's at UCLA. Rutgers at Wisconsin. That's a big game. If only because, like, Wisconsin needs a win. Like enough's enough. All right.
Enough's enough.
We've had enough.
Enough is enough.
Enough's enough. Beat Rutgers.
You put UNLV in the field if Wisconsin loses at home against Rutgers. That's all I got to say. You also have league tournaments, Missouri Valley, ASUN, a lot of stuff going down on Sunday as well. And Colorado at Oregon. So double bubble-ish. Like, Colorado's in the mix there. Oregon's on the outside looking in, but that's also worth keeping an eye on there on Thursday. Wednesday's much better there, but Thursday we've got enough there. And yeah, you mentioned Washington at Washington State. Cougars are in. And then Court Report on Tuesday had kind of a coaching carousel, just primer, kind of a scan of stuff there in Washington. is unfortunately a spot where it is just viewed as there's going to be a change there, barring, you know, winning out, getting the auto bid, and maybe that changes it. But yeah, that is viewed as one that is inevitable. So if you want to know more about the coaching carousel, keep an eye on that note. I've had like, you know, 5 texts in the past 90 seconds. Everyone, leave me the hell alone. I'm trying to finish a podcast.
Oh, Deadleg's popular. Look how popular Deadleg is.
It's been relentless. I just got enough. Give me like 4 minutes to finish this show. Nothing's happening, by the way. It's just people.
What do I look like? Look when I do this. It's like I think I'm Donkey Kong.
Yes. Yeah.
I like Donkey Kong. I don't really understand it. I'm like, what's going on? Why is Donkey Kong up to so much? I don't know.
The questions that perplex the human condition. I don't know. What do you want from me?
It's a reasonable question. All right, can we go?
You got another show in a few minutes, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So we had another next episode is Friday.
Yeah.
Can't 9 a.m. Eastern, because Paris isn't coming off a triple header. So 9 a.m. Eastern.
Yeah.
Friday morning. If you enjoy the YouTube show, we'll be. That's the best
way
to
do it. Hey.
Best way to get to it first. And yeah, I think that's a show. Trilly Donovan is not texting me. I did do a Q&A with Trilly Donovan. That is also part of this week's court report. If you don't know who Trilly Donovan is, go read the court report. But if you're a diehard college basketball fan, you are probably familiar with this person who no one knows who he is. But that was involved as well. I appreciate it.
I know who he is.
Who's your guess?
Adam Zagoria. It is. It's Zagoria.
At the bottom of the list.
No, it's him.
It's not Zagoria.
Yes, it is.
Not. Did Zagoria find you, by the way?
I ain't heard from him. I think he's boycotting me.
Look out. Yeah. Yeah. He's on your ass. That's for sure.
I know. I know what's going on. I know what's happening. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. and Teagle. Legend. Shouts to Huck. Shouts to Larnell. Shouts to Zags. Shouts to Tony Hinkle while we're on it. If you haven't subscribed to the Ion College Basketball Podcast, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple, Spotify. More of us than there are of them. That should be reflected in the comments. So make sure you're doing that. And we're going to talk to you again on Friday morning. Till then, take care.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.